Hey guys, before I take you to today's content, I want you guys to take advantage of our Pro Web Legal Services initiative that we have going on right now in the second quarter of 2024. What is that? Well, it's a website that you get 100% full-blown website with 1 year maintenance, because with SSL certificate, hosting, etc., all for 50% less than the normal cost. This offer used to be $4,500. We're now giving it to you for $2,250, 100%, no strings attached. All you have to do is go to the show notes right now and click on the link where it says Pro Web Legal, and you'll get all the information. So until then, enjoy the show.
Welcome to Marketing Solutions for Local Law Firms, the podcast that provides you with all the latest digital marketing tools, tips, and strategies you will need to implement in order to stay ahead of your competition. If you are looking to substantially increase your caseload in the next 6 months, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's the host of our show, the local business guy himself, Frank Deming.
Hello, 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 everyone. This is Frank Deming, the local business guy. Welcome to another episode of Marketing Solutions for Local Law Firms. Happy Wednesday. Happy hump day, everyone. I hope you guys are having a rockin' week thus far. Today, I have the privilege of interviewing another attorney, because today is Meet the Attorney. And we're going to get into some topics that I love, and it's been a while since I've talked about, and that is personal injury. Not only that, we're going to be talking about niche law practices within the personal injury realm. And there's no one better than to discuss that than the great John Grove. Hey, John, how's it going?
Wow. What an intro. That's impressive. I want to meet this guy. Who is this John Grove guy? Well, thank you for having me. This is always a pleasure to talk about the practice of law and talk to an expert like you. So hopefully I'll learn as much as I'll give to the audience.
Hey, you know, it's always a privilege to me when I get to speak to people like you who've been in law for 24 years, you said, right?
Correct.
And I'm assuming always within the realm of personal injury, or did you dabble with other stuff?
Boy, pretty close. The first couple of years of my law practice, I worked for a general practice firm. So I did wills and corporate structures and collections and federal. I had a federal trial over the dispute of a will, but it was in bankruptcy court. I mean, just unusual things that I enjoyed, and it kind of gave me an idea of what's out there, and also the better idea that I didn't like that stuff. So I realized when I was in court, I enjoyed the trial aspect of it, and I enjoyed the personal injury aspect of it. And that's when I was able to kind of, like I said, niche down into personal injury, you know, plaintiff's practice.
Okay. So yeah, we're going to be talking about niche law practice. Now, let me ask you this question. So personal injury, to me, of all the practices, I deal with a lot of different attorneys with different things. But to me, personal injury has always been very intriguing, because it's almost as if you guys have to be maybe not experts in a lot of different things, but you have to have a deep knowledge of certain things. Like, for instance, like for medical malpractice, I was seeing this article on this brain injury thing, and you know how you have to manage the wave brains of brains of how, you know, maybe this car accident caused this brain wave to act differently and all that. So that, to me, is intriguing. Like, how deep do you get into cases when stuff like that happens?
Boy, when you are getting ready for like a major hearing, a deposition or a trial, certainly you eat, breathe, live that particular case. And, you know, there have been times when I was trying to think of one. For example, I had a client whose foot was fractured because he fell through these stairs, and learning about all the different bones in the foot and the particular fusion that would need to take place and the orthotics, all those things, you really do become an expert for that short period of time. And I can tell you that was a couple of years ago. So I've lost that knowledge. I did not, you deal with it really intensely for a few months. And then during the trial, that's all you know. And you're hopefully as versed in it as the doctors or as your client or as defense counsel's doctors, so you can speak intelligently with them and catch them in their lies or in their ways of trying to minimize your client's injury. So you really become an expert in that field, in that area for that time period. And then as time goes on, if you handle multiple cases that are similar injuries, then I think your brain just works differently and you maintain that knowledge. But for me, it's part of the fun, right? I mean, because you get to learn about a lot of different things a lot of the time.
Yeah. Now, personal injury, I mean, is a broad term. I mean, there's, there's medical malpractice, there's car accident, motorcycle accidents. Like, what's your favorite of all of those to work
What's my favorite? Boy, that's a great question. what's my favorite? So I can tell you my non-favorites. My non-favorites in Wisconsin are medical malpractice because, I don't know if it's 90% of the time plaintiffs are losing. And they're extremely expensive cases to prosecute. And the law is set up in a way that it sets the victims up to fail. So that's not my favorite because of the way the system is set up.
90% of the time, you said? That
90% of the time. And there are so few cases that are actually even filed in Wisconsin that it's really rare. I mean, this is a couple of years ago. I'm trying to think what the actual numbers were, but our firm filed like 5% of all the cases that were filed that year. And I think we filed two. It was just like some crazy number that, it sounds impressive, but it actually wasn't because there were so few cases filed that year. So that's one that we don't handle many at all. And I can't think of any right now that we're actively pursuing. Workers' comp is the second thing that's not my favorite. Because workers' comp in Wisconsin is such that it takes a very long time to really handle the case and get compensation for your clients. You have to have a different really setup in your firm, or really a different mechanism for handling cases for these clients. And that's not what our practice is. So then you go to third-party cases, which are car crashes and things like that. So in that realm, probably my favorite kind of cases, I really do premises liability cases where somebody fell through the stairs, or you have those kind of facts where stairs collapsed, a porch collapsed, things like that. I've had some crazy stories about dealing with really bad landlords in the Wisconsin, but in Milwaukee and Madison, La Crosse, different areas where there were really horrific landlords who did terrible things and left their properties in such bad condition that it felt good to handle those cases for those clients, because I think I not only helped my client, but I helped all the other tenants and hopefully more people throughout the area because of what we did and what we showed to the community. We had a lot of different news articles written about some of our clients who were, almost really abused by landlords. We had a client who they had to use the pliers to turn the hot water on in their shower because there was a hole and there wasn't a nozzle. There wasn't any kind of handle. It was like a screw, and they had to take their pliers, put it in the wall, turn the screw to turn the hot water on. And you can imagine there's a hole in the wall. So there's water as you're taking a shower that's going in the hole in the wall and then creating mold and all kinds of other issues for not only them, but all the other tenants. So I think those are, I guess today those are probably my favorite cases. Tomorrow I'll probably have a different answer, but today those are my favorite.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey guys, I hope you guys are enjoying today's content. While I have you on here, I want to introduce you to a promo that we have going on for the spring of 2024 for all legal practices throughout the U.S. I have an outstanding offer that we've never been able to offer before, but we want to do it because you have been an avid listener. We're only promoting this to people who listen to the show. So if you're an attorney and you are an avid listener to the show and you're thinking about possibly opening your own practice, you want to pay attention to this announcement. We are offering a full website with hosting, SSL certificate, online booking service, online appointment management, and more, and much, much more, with a 1-year maintenance, all for $2,250. That's $2,250 one-time fee, and you have a full-fledged website. If you want to know more about this, just give us a call at 888-416-7752 or send us an email at info@lbmsllc.com. Just make sure that you mentioned that you heard it on the show, and we'll definitely get you that discount. So with that, I'm going to bring you back to the content. Interesting. Wow, I didn't even think that was possible to live under those conditions.
Oh my gosh. I could show you some pictures that would just horrify you. Yeah.
I'm going to ask you another question about, I mean, I know these are small cases, but what about the dog bite cases? Like, is any validity to that? Because it's like, how hurt can you get from a dog bite? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, come on. How hurt can you get from a dog bite? I should show you some pictures of how hurt you can get from a dog bite. I guess that, so we can talk about the business of law to some extent. So, mm-hmm. When you look at car crashes in Wisconsin, the law is set up really to help insurance companies and not the injured victims, because you can be fully insured in Wisconsin and only have $25,000 of coverage. So if you're an injured party and somebody who has full coverage injures you and you don't have insurance, or you don't drive so you don't have to have insurance anyway, and the other party breaks your leg, the most you can ever get is $25,000 from the insurance company. You could go after them individually, but they probably don't have anything. So that's not helpful. I mean, that's bad for the victim. It's not going to help, health insurance get their money back, or have the victim get the proper care possibly. So there's a small chance that that person, the victim, will be made whole, if you want to use those legal kind of terms. It's different when you're dealing with, like I said before, the premises liability cases, because those are more commercial lines. Commercial lines usually have more coverage. So you can do better by your client because you can get them more compensation for their injuries usually. Same thing applies for dog bites. Dog bites, if you're dealing with a commercial line or with just a homeowner's policy usually has that much more in insurance. You can have $100,000, $300,000, $500,000 or an umbrella policy. So the likelihood of getting more compensation for your client is there in a dog bite case. And I can tell you now, I'm just trying to think of an example. I have a case with a young person who was bit in the face by a dog. And if you're a certain age, let's say you're 5, 6, 7 in Wisconsin, you can't be held contributory negligent. So, and in Wisconsin, in dog bites, a dog is strictly liable, meaning they're assumed to be responsible. They're the ones that bit you. You don't have to say that you caused the bite. There's strict liability in Wisconsin. So you have an easier time proving that this dog was responsible for causing the injury. And then it's a matter of what's that facial scar worth? If it's a young person, you have to wait for a time to see how the different seasons will affect, the lack of sun in the winter or lots of sun in the summer, how is that going to affect, you know, the person's scar, and whether it's a long-term scar or a short-term scar. And if you get the right vitamins and the right diet and whatever kind of treatment, maybe it'll go away to some extent. But long story short, if you look at that and look at future care or future surgery, that could be a big difference. You know, that could be a surgery that you may have to have multiple surgeries. So then you're looking at not only your past pain and suffering for the active suffering of going through this dog bite to your face, but then the scar forever potentially, and then surgeries to minimize the scar. You know, that could be a lot of medical care and a lot of pain, suffering, and disfigurement. So you could be talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in compensation for that victim. So it could be as small as just a couple of puncture wounds on somebody's ankle. If you're trying to deliver your Amazon package to a house and this Shih Tzu comes and bites you, well, that's a minimal case. But I've had cases where Rottweilers have burst through screens and bit my client, who is a UPS delivery person, in the stomach. And that's horrific. I mean, that's a big difference.
You know, it's funny story. I have a buddy of mine. This is back when I was living in New York. And he was having a party, and his dog was a little wildcat. It was like a pit bull, but it wasn't a big pit bull. It was a small pit bull. And the dog got away. I think someone wanted to, you know, let him loose for a little bit because he was tied up because there was a lot of people. And the dog bit me on one of the on one of my thighs. Not my thigh, my calf. And I mean, it hurt. I went to the doctor. I got treatment. I went to the hospital and everything. Did I get any? I did get some stitches. I still have the scar there. I remember this was back when I was probably in my late teens, early 20s. And someone was like, "You should sue." And I'm like, "No, he's my friend. I mean, it's the dog got away, got bit, no big deal." I mean, it was like the insurance covered everything. My out of pocket cost was probably like $50 if you think about it, you know? So it was like, why am I sue for what? You know what I mean? For $50? You know, so, but someone was telling me that you should. Yeah, the insurance, you know, because you're going to have a scar for life. And the scar is there for life. Is it a big deal? I don't know. That's why I was minimizing the dog bite stuff. But I didn't think about the face. The face is that's different.
Well, and that's, I mean, you look at the kind of the calculus of injuries, you know, an ankle bite to a male is worth less than a bite to a woman's left hand. You know, a woman's left hand is worth more than a woman's right hand. Really? Because a woman's left hand has a wedding ring usually, so it's more visible. So you're showing off your wedding ring or you're showing off your jewelry on your left hand more than your right hand. So the value of that injury is more because it's more visible. A woman's face is worth more than a man's face, you know, in the calculus of injury. So all those arguments, you know, you kind of look at what might a jury award for different injuries. And if you're a model, well, you could be a hand model, you know, you just never know, or a foot model or a real model, you know, a body model, face model, whatever else it is. So
that's what amazes me about personal injury attorneys. I mean, you guys got to get into the weeds of that, because who would have thought, left hand is more valuable for a woman than the right hand. That's interesting. So let's talk about niche law practices. So you started out doing a variety of different things and you niched down. So in your opinion, you know, on specializing or creating a niche practice, what's your opinion on that? I mean, obviously you know you've done it, so you know what the benefits of it. So why don't you share some of that with us?
Sure. And again, I'm biased cuz I think it works for me. You know, my opinion on that in general is there's so much information in the law that and I certainly understand a general practitioner and how they're able to service a lot of different things and a lot of different aspects. But when it comes to some unique parts of our legal practice, there are certain things that you can't do do good things for your clients if you're a jack of all trades. You can identify and do issue spotting and identify certain things, but unless you really are all in on one topic or one general general topic, like personal injury, for example, or intellectual property, for example, or wills and trusts, or bankruptcy, or criminal, if you're all in on that silo, I think you're going to do better for your clients, number one. And number two, because you are all in on that, just going back to the business of law, you're able to service more clients because you can go to your friends who are bankruptcy attorneys or criminal defense attorneys or others and say, hey, you stick in your silo. I'm going to stick with my silo. And you know, hopefully you'll trust me that you can refer me cases. And I think that will help build your practice over years because you, I have no interest in ever doing a divorce. Never was interested in ever doing filing any kind of divorce documents or appearing for a divorce, or whatever. So I have my friends who I know are very good divorce attorneys, and whenever any clients come and ask me, I refer them to those attorneys. So it's something that then I assume, and I think I have people that have trusted me over the years that those attorneys refer me their personal injury practice cases because they know that that's something that's all I deal with. So I think, number one, you're going to do good things for your clients if you're niching into a certain practice area. And I think it's good business-wise because you're able to get referrals from other practice areas.
I love it. I totally agree. I mean, I'm the same way in my business model as well. Now, you talked about one way that you are getting business is through referrals, which is a strong, and it's probably, what, like 70-80% of your cases or?
It's not that much just because we do a lot of different advertising. And so it certainly is. And I actually would have known this last week if you would have asked me, but now I forgot what the numbers were because we just did a dive into our last year's numbers. So it's a good percentage, but it is not as big as 70%.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because I mean, yeah, you make friends with other attorneys or whatever, with different practices. And yeah, I could see that because there's the what's that called? The good old boys network with the attorneys sometimes. And you pass business around and that I love it. Okay. So now, all right. You talked about niching down and I get it. I do understand the concept, but how would you advise a young attorney who's listening to this right now, who's struggling? What would you advise him or her how to select a niche?
Boy, how to select a niche? I think one of the things that I did, I'm trying to think of how to say this in a different way. So every courthouse is public. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you can go and you can watch any kind of hearing you want. Take the time to research and take the time just simply to go to court and watch a criminal trial, see what happens, go to a civil trial, go to traffic court, you know, do those kind of things. As a young attorney, I assume you're not very busy. And if you're trying to figure out what you want to do, you have the luxury of time, or you have the luxury of, you know, fewer family commitments or other kind of commitments. So you can do that work after 5 o'clock, and maybe you spend from noon until five going to court and looking at different things and get a sense of what all the different types of law are, you know, by going to probate court to you're talking to the clerks, talking to judges even. Everybody loves to give advice. You know, judges love it. Clerks love it. Other attorneys love it. Look and see who is in the courthouse, who's doing these different practice areas, and then reach out and say, hey, can I buy you a coffee? that's one thing, you know, about members of the bar. I think in Wisconsin, certainly, and maybe I assume it's in other states also, that we're very collegial. That I had a law student mm-hmm. who reached out to me probably just a few weeks ago. We were emailing last week, and he just wanted to get a sense of what my practice was like, because he just wanted to know. And I think that's a fantastic thing to do. And I will happily take the person, you know, take this person out to coffee, take him out to lunch, whatever. It's an hour. It's hopefully going to benefit not only him, but me, and hopefully the profession one day, mm-hmm. and help people understand, or help law students understand what they're getting into when they do start practicing law. Give them some ideas, because I know I had that luxury. I called a bunch of different lawyers who were not only CEOs of big law firms, but also solo practitioners and others. And the way that I did it back in law school was I looked up, I don't know how I did it, but I looked up lawyers who had graduated from my undergraduate school. Mm. And I said, and I sent him an email. I think actually I sent him letters, now that I think of it, because this was 25 plus years ago. So I don't think I sent an email. I probably sent a letter saying, hey, I know you're also, you know, you're a fighting Phoenix also. I'm going to law school. Do you have time to talk with me about your practice? And so I can help, I can get some help in understanding what I want to do when I become a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And I went to lunch with a number of different lawyers, and it was very helpful. So I think that's something that would be probably my number one piece of advice with young lawyers, is ask others, go to court. If you don't know of anybody, you know, go to court and then see those lawyers who are there practicing, fighting in the trenches, and ask them if they have time to sit down and talk about their practice area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you got to get a sense. And also, you also have to get a sense of what kind of a person you are, I would assume, because like, for instance, I know of a couple of IP lawyers that don't do any kind of litigation. It's just basically they set your intellectual property and that's it. But they won't fight against, you know, if someone's trying to steal your intellectual property.
Sure.
You know, they'll probably farm that out to someone else. And then there's some people who love the litigation piece of fighting that. So yeah, also, it depends on your personality, I'm assuming, correct?
No, and that's a great point. You know, we had a fight with, you know, we were getting a trademark on one of our slogans, and I had one attorney who filed all the documents and everything was fine. And then when there was an attorney in, I think, Pennsylvania, who said that our slogan was too close to their slogan. Mm-hmm. And then the attorney I was dealing with said, it's not me. Let's get you over to this person. And then that intellectual property litigator did that exact thing, where they were the ones that went to court. Yeah, it's a personality issue. It's a preference issue as to what you want to do. And I guess that's the fun of being a lawyer, is you can have an interest in a lot of different things. And you can really, you know, find your specialty, find what you like to do, and hopefully it'll be something that you love to do.
Yeah. Now, I mean, obviously you love personal injury. We talked about, you know, car accidents and all that. Those are, you know, good cases. I read sometime in November of 2023 that, you know, that there was the improvement of the self-driving vehicles was going to put a huge dent into the personal injury law practice area. Have you heard anything about that? And what's your thought on that?
I think about that all the time. It's my future. Of course I'm thinking about that. Yeah. My goodness. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Yes. And I have a GM vehicle that mm-hmm. has Super Cruise, mm-hmm. and Super Cruise is something you have to sign up for. And as long as you, my understanding is, as long as you pay your, you know, your yearly subscription, you can use Super Cruise. And that's the one where you see, you know, like during football games, you see the guys do the, you know, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. because their hands are free and the car is driving itself. I asked, our the guy who sold me the car, I said, what do you think about this with my future? And he said, well, the only issue is once, if it's a new vehicle, you have the subscription, it's something that you paid for because it's a new vehicle. Once that vehicle goes on the used market, then it's up to the next purchaser to pay that subscription. And they may not. And what's the, they don't know the percentage of people who are buying that subscription. So yes, it's going to be an issue, but until it's mandated and it's something that you have a high percentage of people who are buying the subscription for self-driving vehicles, I don't think it's going to be that big of a concern, because there are going to be the used vehicle market out there, people who are cheaping out and they don't pay for that, and they're just driving what looks like a self-driving vehicle, but it may not have all the bells and whistles of self-driving. So I guess I understand the concern. I am concerned about it, and obviously because I'm talking to people about this, you know, pretty frequently, but I think it's not something that's going to happen as fast as we would think it is happening, because of that, the personal pocketbook issue and the used vehicle market. And I think you're going to see correlations with recessions, depressions, inflation, and whether there's more car crashes based on use or non-use of self-driving aspects of vehicles, because people just turn it off, or they forget to buy it, or their credit card bounces, or a check bounces, or credit card, you know, has a limit issue because you can't afford this $500 a year payment.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is also the factor of people like myself who gets freaked out by the thought of being in the New Jersey Turnpike and having this car drive me.
Have you? So I was driving ours down to, we had to go to a wedding down in Ohio. Uh-huh. So we're on the highway, and it is weird, because when you're driving, I had the setting on where it automatically changes lanes based on cars in front of you. So we're driving and my hands are, you know, kind of on the wheel, and this is kind of cool, but it's like changing lanes, which is really, you know, maybe for me, like a, you know, older gentleman, I'm not used to it, so I'm freaked out. Maybe younger people who come of age using this won't be as freaked out, but it was really unsettling, I guess is a nice way of putting it, to have that loss of control. Because the car senses the car in front of you, changes lanes, you know, safely, and then goes without you touching anything, it's putting the blinker on and changing lanes and dodging and weaving in the traffic. Yeah, that was just in traffic that was kind of light. I can't imagine being in the Turnpike, or, you know, in downtown Chicago or New York or whatever. My Lord.
Yeah, yeah. So there's also that. So as people like myself die out, I can see that becoming less of an issue, because like you said, the people who'll be born with it, because I always think about it. You're like, you know, like my kids, well, one of them has never seen a phone with a cord in it, you know, other than on TV. So you start thinking about that.
Gosh.
You start thinking about that. So as people like myself die out, people like yourself die out, then, you know, then there'll be a problem, because all they know is these self-driving cars, you know?
Yeah.
Because they, well, what's the problem? I'll just get in the car and it'll go and takes me. But, you know, but if you've had control of a car before, it's hard to let go. So I don't see it happening anytime soon.
So, yeah. I think it's a long-term concern, certainly. And then that goes back to, you know, like we started the conversation about niching down into different practice areas. You know, I'm assuming there's going to be a niche of self-driving car versus self-driving car, and some kind of glitch there. You know, did you change your settings? You know, is it something that it's the human error of not doing X, Y, and Z? I don't even know what you would or wouldn't do, but you know, those kind of things with a personal injury lawyer, as opposed to person versus person. And that's also, you know, we have different aspects of our practice that are personal injury, but they're not car personal injury cases. Right. So like our premises liability or our vaccine practice or dog bites, you know, things like that, that we don't have to rely on the car practice.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. I was just curious. I saw that in November and I thought about it because I do deal with a lot of personal injury attorneys. And I was like, I'm going to ask that question on a podcast. That's when I get one on. Mm-hmm. So there you go. You're the first one I was able to ask. So no.
It's a scary question, but I think we have a few years to really understand it, hopefully more than a few.
Yeah, let's see what happens, right? Well, this has been great. I really, really enjoy talking to you. I mean, I love the success that you have. You have a very good practice. Speaking of that, what is the website where people can actually check you out?
Sure. Thank you. Yeah. And this has been great. I appreciate the time. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Growthlawfirm.com. Somewhat easy. You can see there, GROTH Law Firm. Growthlawfirm.com is our website. It's just as easy as that. We have a couple other websites. Like we have a law firm that we purchased a couple of years ago, Samster, Conkle and Safran. So SKSlawyers.com. But you can get to all of our different websites by going to growthlawfirm.com.
Awesome. And I will put that in the show notes so people can check out. I will also, if you don't mind, place your LinkedIn profile on the show notes, just in case people want to know a little bit more about you. You and I are connected through LinkedIn, but you know, it doesn't hurt for more people to have connections with you as well. And you only practice in Wisconsin, correct? That's the only state.
So for our personal injury practice, we practice in Wisconsin. I am co-counseling on a number of cases that are in other states, like Illinois, Kansas, okay. Nevada, with other attorneys who are there. So we have people who, you know, this is not unusual, fly from Milwaukee to Vegas and get in a car crash in Vegas and come back to their home state. And they hire us, and then we co-counsel with an attorney there if it has to go into litigation. So yeah, certainly for our car crash cases and those kind of cases, we have a more Wisconsin-based system. For our vaccine injury compensation program cases, that's international. There's only one court in the nation, the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, that handles those cases. And we have three attorneys that are licensed to practice law in that in that U.S. Court of Federal Claims. And we have clients all over the world who were injured because of a vaccine that was administered on either a U.S. base, military base, nation, or internationally, or in the 50 states of the U.S. So that's a little bit different practice, but we're certainly Wisconsin based, but we've helped clients all over the world.
Now that's interesting. I did see that on your website that you do the vaccines. I didn't get into it much, but that's an interesting practice because I didn't think that was global. I thought that was something that's definitely state to state. Yeah. But you can actually help someone that's in, Jamaica, if you will.
if you're military and you mm-hmm. get a or if you're at you work for the State Department and you're mm-hmm. on, in essence, U.S. soil because there's a flu vaccine that's administered in, I don't know where do the ambassadors live in England, I guess, mm-hmm. in London, I guess, mm-hmm. if it's administered on, quote unquote, U.S. soil or a U.S. military base, mm-hmm. Then yes, you can get compensation for those kind of injuries.
Interesting. Oh, so it has to be within that. It can't be like if you went to a CVS in London or something and get it. It has to be in your military base or in the, what's that called? The, embassy.
Correct. Right?
Because it's U.S. territory. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm glad I asked that question. but anyway, yeah, again, this has been great. I'm going to put all your information in the show notes. I know you're a very busy attorney and, helping people with their injuries and everything. But before I let you go, is there anything is there anything I did not ask you that you think would benefit the audience?
Boy, that you didn't ask me. No, I think you asked some great questions. Thank you for your time. I think know, this is something, you know, maybe there's one thing I would say as a as general advice is, you know, podcasts like this, podcasts by different lawyers all over the United States, you can really get a sense of what people are doing, what their practice is like by just simply listening, you know, and then reaching out to them and say, hey, do you have time for a cup of coffee or just, you know, like this, just a virtual coffee, you know, people love to talk about themselves and people love to give advice, or good people do, I should say that. So it does not hurt to reach out and try to get some good help from good people. So certainly, you know, do that first step of reaching out and see if you can get some advice about what you want to do and what niche you want to go on in your practice of law.
There you go. And that, I'm going to take that as an invitation. So I hope you heard that, young lawyer.
I'm invite, here.
Invite
you know
John
how to find
for,
me.
Invite John for a virtual coffee and see if he could help you niche down and grow your practice in 2024 and beyond. So with that, I am going to put an end to this episode. It's been a great episode. Thanks a lot, John, again for coming. This has been Frank Deming, the local business guy, and you've just been blessed by the great John Groves. Take care, everyone. Until next week, peace out!
Thanks for listening to another episode of Marketing Solutions for Local Law Firms, the podcast that provides you with all the latest digital marketing tools, tips, and strategies you will need to implement in order to stay ahead of your competition. If you would like to know more about the topic we discussed in the show today, reach out to Frank and his team at 888-416-7752 and schedule a discovery call with one of the marketing consultants. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, send an email to podcast@lbmsllc.com and we will put you on the schedule. With that being said, until next week, make it a successful digital marketing day. Peace out.